A listener note, this story contains adult content and language.
Our second speaker is Dan Markell, speaking about retributive justice and the demands of democratic citizenship.
Much of Dan Markell's work focused on a legal concept called retributive justice, the idea that the size of the punishment should be proportionate to the size of the crime.
Greetings, everybody. Thank you very much to Nick and to Eugene and to Todd and all of my co-panelists, as well as to...
This speech, to a bunch of legal academics at a hotel ballroom in D.C., was one of dozens Dan gave on the subject over the years.
I argue that we can, as retributivists, loosen up on the criminalization question and move beyond the insistence on moral wrongdoing as a prerequisite for justifying retributive punishment, at least in liberal democracies. And that qualification...
One of his most famous papers is an article called Against Mercy, right? Which sounds hard, like, how can you be against mercy?
That's Dan's colleague, Mark Spotswood.
But the idea is exercising mercy in a case-by-case way and lessening punishment really is just creating disparities between offenders who've done similar things.
So I'll stop there because I've already gone on, but I'm happy to answer questions later, and hopefully this will provoke some conversation. Thanks.
Dan wasn't just a colleague to Spotswood. He was a friend. They first met when Spotswood moved from Northwestern to FSU in 2011.
I was already familiar with Dan in part because of his prolific blogging, right? He had a kind of high profile given that he was still relatively early on in his career at that time.
At the law school, Spotswood ended up with an office right next to Dan's.
It was a giant mess all the time, but it reflected the intensity of his curiosity and his interests. Equal parts, you know, papers he was reading or books or his kids' artwork, just kind of all spread all over the place.
And in his cluttered office, the two of them would sit and debate. And pretty soon they were friends.
I think it was like the second or third email I ever got from him. He signed XOXO Danny. Right? And I was like, are we at the hugs and kisses stage already? I think I've met you twice.
One of the topics they debated was, how do we decide what punishment to dole out when a person is convicted of a crime?
He thought plenty of things about our criminal justice system were hard to defend if you really wanted to dig deep into the sort of underlying moral principles.
Spotswood was one of the very last people to see Dan alive.
After he was shot, before he was legally dead, but, you know, that was sort of keeping the body alive so that his parents could come and say their goodbyes. He wasn't able to become conscious or talk at that point, so that was just saying goodbye.
Like all of Dan's friends, Spotswood hoped justice would be served, and soon. But he was also a legal scholar, who knew that the system doesn't always work the way it should.
TV gives an impression of sort of investigators as omniscient and superpowered, and in reality, most cases that get solved quickly, it's a pretty easy story to unravel. When people have covered their tracks, it can be very hard to ever find them. And lots of cases do go unsolved, and it's just a reality of the criminal justice system.
The pain of Dan's murder was hard enough. But now his friends and family had to face another hard truth. What if, despite the best efforts of police and prosecutors, Dan's case was never resolved?
Danny's whole life, later in life, his adult life, was about justice. That's what his being was. That's what he taught. That's what he believed in. And so obviously we want to see some justice for him, for his kids, for us. But closure, does this, once we find the solutions, that there is answers, does that mean it goes away? It still doesn't go away.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From Wondery, I'm Matthew Scherr, and this is Over My Dead Body.
Baby, I'm guilty. I've got his blood on my hand.
Baby, you're crazy. I never touched that man.
The first season is called Tally, and this is episode 6, Against Mercy. The last time Rob Adelson saw his entire family together was in early July of 2014. Harvey, his dad, was turning 70, and the Adelsons threw a big party at their new Miami Beach condo. Rob and Haritha flew down with their two children. Wendy was there with her boys. Charlie was there too, of course. The crowd milled through the apartment and out onto the patio, which faced the golden sand of South Point Beach. A chef, who Wendy hired, served paella to guests. Harvey had grown up as a working-class kid in Brooklyn. Now he was living in a luxury complex in Miami, filled with celebrities and other multimillionaires. He had his three children, a doctor, a dentist, and a lawyer, and his four grandchildren, all together. What more could a Jewish parent want? It was just a few weeks later that Rob and Haritha got the phone call that Dan had been shot.
Donna called me on Saturday morning. I think she had already tried Rob and couldn't get through.
Yeah, she had texted me a couple. I was in a meeting out of town. I was in Chicago. And when they spoke to me, they told me they'd already talked to Haritha. They texted me a couple times. And then they texted me they need to talk to me right now.
Rob excused himself from his meeting and stepped outside.
And I remember exactly where I was standing in the lobby, and they explained that something has happened. Somebody shot Danny, and they took him to the hospital, but he didn't make it.
He tried calling Wendy.
I called her multiple times. I called my parents multiple times. Finally, she actually called me at a strange time during the day when I happened to be free, and I picked up the phone, and she said she didn't want to talk about anything because her kids were around.
She seemed surprised he was available.
Yeah, she said she really just wanted to leave a message. And I said, well, you know, you called me. And, you know, I asked her point blank, you know, what do you think happened? And her response was, well, Danny had no shortage of enemies. But that's the most we've talked about it. And that's one of two conversations we've had since Danny was killed.
Later, Rob would want to talk more with his family about what happened to Dan.
They just didn't want to talk about it.
They kept saying that it doesn't involve them, and that Wendy felt that I was only interested in who would have done this, which seems like a normal reaction when someone you know well, is gunned down in their home. I think not being interested in a murder of someone you know well is unusual.
He never did get a straight answer from his family, which shocked him. And as affidavits appeared, suggesting members of his family may have ordered Dan's murder, Rob stopped speaking with them altogether. Tallahassee police believed they had enough evidence to arrest four people: Sigfredo Garcia, Luis Rivera, Katie Magbanua, and Charlie Adelson. Sigfredo and Luis were arrested in the spring of 2016. And in October, the police came for Katie. That left Charlie Adelson. It was up to Leon County's top prosecutor, Willie Meggs, to make the decision on whether to indict. Meggs was the state attorney there for more than three decades.
I retired in 2017 and have been kind of enjoying the good life. I say all the time, every day is Saturday, except Sunday. So it's a good life.
Meggs is a tall, rangy guy. A lifetime resident of North Florida, he now spends his retirement on a farm outside of Tallahassee.
Just a few minutes ago, my turkeys were out walking around in the pasture. I have turkeys that they have been up on my front doorsteps.
He says from the very beginning, the murder of Dan Markell was unusual.
This one clearly began to take on the appearance of a hit. We didn't know it was a hired killing at that time, but it took on the appearance of a hit. And that is unique. We don't have many of those. Fortunately, we don't.
Meg says the case against Garcia and Rivera seemed pretty straightforward.
There is a ton of evidence against Garcia and his co-defendant with the videos and the sightings and them being in Tallahassee. And so the case against them was relatively simple.
And those arrests allowed prosecutors to charge Katie.
That's kind of what you need to go up the chain. You're going to need somebody to give you a little testimony to make the circumstantial evidence make sense.
Meggs prides himself on his track record as a prosecutor. He says when it came to the big cases, and especially big murder cases, he and his deputies rarely lost. And he says a major reason for that was that he was methodical. He was careful. He didn't take unnecessary risks.
The standard that we have to look at as prosecutors, we have to have a reasonable likelihood of a conviction. And we only get one shot.
One shot. Under the law, you can't be tried for the same crime twice. So when you pull that trigger, Meggs believes, you better be sure you hit your target. Because if you don't, one day...
the person's free. And could step up and say, yeah, I beat y'all. I did this when you missed a whole bunch of stuff and laugh at us. And so we're not going to find ourselves in that position.
The police investigating the case may have thought they had enough evidence to move on Charlie. But Meggs was less sure.
We all can have opinions about the guilt or innocence of someone or their involvement in it. But opinions don't count. What we got to have is evidence, and evidence is in the form of either physical or testimonial evidence, and so to tie it to other people. And you know, I suspicion there are other people involved. I don't think Katie had any real interest in ordering a hit on a college professor in Tallahassee. She's not motivated by that. She's motivated by other things.
Luis Rivera is cooperating. But Meg says they've gotten all they can out of him.
And I think Rivera has probably told us all he knows. And so he can't tie by any kind of testimonial evidence other people to this case.
And so after Katie's arrest, he waited. Katie's lawyers confirmed to us that she'd been offered an immunity deal by the state attorney's office and that she'd rejected it. And the lawyers say there's a simple explanation for why. There's only one reason why a mother of two young children would turn down immunity and instead sit in jail for nearly 3 years, awaiting a trial where she risks a mandatory life sentence. She was not involved and has no information into the tragic and gruesome murder of Dan Markell.
I mean, we're just waiting on a break, and it may come, it may not.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
There was another point of view on the case inside the state prosecutor's office.
Well, I can recall a good many cases that went forward to trial with less evidence. And in fact, much less evidence.
Jeremy Mutz worked as an assistant state attorney under Willie Meggs at the time of Dan's death.
I've tried some murder cases where we start out with less evidence, and as the thing goes to trial, witnesses don't want to come to court. They leave town. It's even less than that, and we still go to trial. We still can get a conviction.
Yeah, there was disagreement in Tallahassee about who to charge in the case. Willie Meggs himself admits it.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of attention over a period of time.
But Meggs held firm, and when the police released their probable cause affidavit to the press, the one that pointed the finger at Charlie Adelson, Meggs told the local newspaper, quote, "What we believe and what we think doesn't count. What evidence do we have?" End quote. Meggs's brushback of the police even got a positive response from Charlie's attorney. Mr. Meggs is one of the most experienced state attorneys in the nation, and he knows probable cause when he sees it. We are thankful that he faithfully and honorably fulfilled his duties and did not approve this document, which amounted to no more than simple speculation after a truly exhaustive investigation. In another interview, Meggs practically dared the police to arrest Charlie Adelson without his blessing. "They don't need me," Meggs said. "Go make the arrest and get ready for your civil suit from whoever they have arrested without probable cause."
He got just so antagonistic and hostile about the case and confrontational.
Jeremy Mutz was appalled.
I think it is unprecedented in the state for an elected state attorney to just basically throw a local police department under the bus like that. I've never heard of that happening.
Mutz speculates that maybe, and this is speculation, Willie Meggs was daunted at the idea of taking on a family with the resources to hire a team of expensive lawyers.
You know, fight a bunch of high-priced attorneys and, you know, make it much more complicated. Just you go after the low-hanging fruit and the thing is cleaned up. And I think that dynamic played into it in terms of an office and the leadership of the office at the time these decisions were being made. And from what people told me, he didn't want to take on more big South Florida attorneys that would represent the family if they were charged. I think a combination of those things played into not wanting to charge these people.
And there's one fact that's hard not to notice in this case. Out of all the suspects, it's the one wealthy white guy who's still free. But Willie Meggs insists that has nothing to do with it.
When you're looking at prosecuting somebody, you don't look at their financial status or you know, you clearly have to look to the evidence that you have to present.
Jeremy Mutz is the first to admit he and Meggs have history. Meggs actually fired Mutz in 2016 after the two had a disagreement over a 50-year-old unsolved triple murder in Tallahassee. Mutz says he wanted to keep pursuing the case. Meg says Mutz was writing a book about the case on the government's dime.
When I escorted him from the office and got on his computer, or really my computer, the office's computer, I found the first three chapters of the book that he was not writing in his computer.
And yet, here's the thing. Mutz is no longer at the state attorney's office. Neither is Meg's. He's retired with his turkeys on his farm. There's a new state attorney who was elected after Meg's retired, and the lead prosecutor on the case is still Assistant Prosecutor Georgia Kappelman.
Is there a scenario where Garcia and Maguana are found guilty, and that's just the end of this?
Yeah. If they won't provide any further information and this office elects not to go back to the grand jury with what we have and try to seek indictments on anyone else, that would be the end of it.
But that would be crazy, right? Because that would be, if they're found guilty and they did this, even if they don't admit it, then what reason could they possibly have done this?
You're right.
But you can see it coming to that sort of...
I don't think it will come to that unsatisfactory conclusion. I believe that somehow, some way, everybody involved will get some justice. But I can't tell you exactly how that's going to go down. I just feel like the truth has a way of coming out, and in this case is probably not going to be an exception.
Katie Magbanua and Sigfredo Garcia are due to go on trial in the summer of 2019. Prosecutors are well-armed. They've got the phone calls, the bank records, and in Luis Rivera, a witness who can explain how the alleged murder plot went down. But there are a few obvious challenges for the prosecution. The first is Luis Rivera. Katie's lawyers are going to paint him as a gang leader and as unreliable.
Rivera cannot keep his story straight.
In a pretrial hearing, Tara Kawas, one of Katie Magbanua's lawyers, started to poke holes in Rivera's testimony.
He will say one thing, we were in the Nissan, and then he switches it around again. The other thing, too, Your Honor, is you have to consider that he admits that he is under the influence the entire time of cocaine, alcohol, and marijuana. That's all the two of them are doing the entire time that they're out there. And the state wants you to take as credible his testimony that he happens to remember exactly what someone said on the phone when he is under the influence.
Kawas suggests that Rivera lied to get himself a sweetheart plea deal. And she says that's because he might very well have been the one who killed Dan Markell.
I say the evidence will probably show later on that he is probably the one that pulled the trigger. He knows that he needs to say that Mr. Garcia is the one that did it because they would have never cut a deal with the person who put two bullets in Mr. Markell.
So Rivera's credibility as the star witness is problem number one. The other problem for the prosecution is Katie herself. Prosecutors clearly hoped she would cooperate and help them to charge Charlie Adelson, but she hasn't.
I don't have any idea why they're not talking. If I put myself in their place, I would be singing like a bird. So, no, I don't know. But it must be something pretty heavy.
Still, Kappelman remains cautiously optimistic and determined for the sake of the victim's family.
It is a long time to wait, and it's, as a prosecutor, it's a long time to wait for, you know, resolution of a case, but certainly the family has, you know, been through hell waiting for this case to get resolved in a fashion that's satisfactory to them, which is only that everyone that had a role in it is going to be held accountable. So the fear of that not being realized is, you know, devastating to Dan Markell's family.
Rob Adelson says he wants the same thing.
And this is the same thing I've said from the very first moment this occurred, is I would like whoever was involved with killing Dan Markell to have the appropriate punishment, whoever it is.
Do you think that'll ever happen?
I think it's probably unlikely for that to happen.
5 years after the murder of her ex-husband, Wendy Adelson lives in Miami with her two sons. She's still very close to her family. And although law enforcement have never accused her of having anything to do with the murder, she has endured quite a bit of scrutiny. We spoke with her on New Year's Eve day of 2018. She stepped away from watching her boys to take the call. She told us that she appreciated us reaching out, but with the legal stuff happening and the way the media had treated her in the past, she was skeptical that talking to us would help. "I think nobody wants to hear my story," she told us. "I don't think people like me." She says she has nothing to hide. She's done nothing wrong. And when she has spoken publicly, like when she went on that writing class podcast, people used her words against her. "The truth is, I remember less and less as the days go on," she told us. "I don't have any bad feelings about people who remember that our divorce was contentious, but it's like ancient history to me. When we suggested, in passing, that she'd turned over a new leaf, she wanted to make clear that was not accurate. Our lives are very much impacted on a daily basis by what happened," she said. She's focused on trying to raise her boys to be happy and joyful kids who have a deep understanding of who their father was. Her kids are the victims, and she's a bystander. Wendy said she'd think about whether she wanted to be recorded, and we'd get back to us.
"Good afternoon. This is John Lauro, L-A-U-R-O. I represent Wendy Adelson, and I understand you're trying to get in touch with her."
About 10 minutes later, her lawyer called to say she wouldn't be interviewed. She'd be happy to speak to us after the trial.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
It's been years since Rob Adelson has spoken with his little sister.
"I would certainly wish things were a different way. I would certainly wish I had some, you know, siblings, share a common story and a common background. I do miss her. There's certain things I see that, you know, I knew she would think is funny. And, that's just not available to me."
"Do you ever think about picking up the phone when you see something funny and texting her?"
No.
Maybe it's the benefit of hindsight, but looking back, Rob and Haritha say there were warning signs right from the start, even at the wedding.
"It felt strange. It was more of like
a..." There was a lot of tension.
Yeah.
It was palpable. You could feel the tension between the two because there had been other events leading up to this. There was some discord already.
The wedding that others said was so beautiful.
"It was like an 80s bar mitzvah with, lights and, no fireworks, but that's probably because it was inside, lasers. That's what it felt more like a bar mitzvah."
And they remember the kosher mix-up really well.
"He had a rabbi friend who was there, who he was close to from Harvard. And apparently at some point there was a platter of food where the meat was with the cheese and he lost it. And he said, 'Meat and cheese, Danny.' And he stormed out." "And did he say something like, 'You should never marry? I told you should never be marrying her.' If only they had listened."
But for them, the wedding also gave an indication of just how controlling Wendy's parents could be.
"This wedding was like it was Donna's wedding. Wendy was in law school, and she really didn't care. She apparently had once said that she just wanted to get married on the beach. She had told Rob that. Instead, she was married in a very elaborate Orthodox wedding with, I think, maybe 8 or 9 bridesmaids. And so this was the opposite of that. But all the details were really made by Donna."
And that, Haritha says, carried on right through the divorce.
"They were very involved in the marriage, and they were definitely involved in the divorce. It was really felt like it was their divorce."
Donna and Harvey occasionally send birthday cards to Rob and Haritha's children, but it's been years since they've seen them in person.
You know, I don't think they're that interested in my kids, unfortunately, because they're fantastic.
Donna and Harvey do see Wendy's kids all the time, which is what they wanted all along. For the other grandparents, Ruth and Phil Markell, the last few years have been one nightmare after another. Phil still wakes up often in the middle of the night thinking about his son.
Either I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking about taking Danny skiing or something, or I'm on the golf course and you meet strangers. You're golfing with two strangers. And what's the most natural thing you talk about? You marry, you have children, you have grandchildren. What do you say? How much do you say? Who do you tell? There isn't a day that goes by in my life that this issue doesn't come up in one way or another. I mean, it's the worst thing in life, I think, is to lose a child at any age. And then to lose two grandchildren.
Because Ruth and Phil haven't seen Dan's kids, their grandchildren, since around the time Katie Magbanua was arrested. That arrest changed something. And although Phil and Ruth had tried to work with Wendy to see the boys, really tried.
She suddenly stopped making that opportunity available. And we continued to send presents and we continued to do other things. We even had our lawyer contact her lawyer and try to see if there was opportunities to designate a meeting. And there wasn't. So that was really the beginning of the cutting off process.
Are there legal means available to grandparents in the city?
Not in Florida.
And nothing. This is,
we really miss the children. We want to make sure that they know how much that we love them and we think about them all the time and how much of a disruption it is in terms of them not only losing their father, but losing, you know, our love. This is the biggest regret. We're now dealing with a struggle, which is, you know, Danny's death as well, and not a normal death. You're dealing with a murder and you're dealing with another major, major loss and disruption.
Wendy had the boys' last names legally changed from Markell to Adelson. She also removed the Hebrew middle name of her oldest son, the name she and Dan had given him at birth.
We don't know if the Markell family exists anywhere in their world. Their names were changed. We just have absolutely no contact, and the kids were very, very young, and therefore susceptible to being told whatever. So we have no idea what's happening in their lives. We cannot communicate with them.
We don't FaceTime. We don't Skype.
Nothing. We send a gift, and we get a 3-word reply: "Thank you." The boys will enjoy it, whether they get the gift or do they. If they get it, was it from us? Do they know who the Markell family is? Do they know the name Markell? We don't know.
Tell us what Danny would have, what you think Danny would have wanted.
Danny's turning over in his grave. Right now.
I visit Danny frequently at the cemetery, and I have a lot of trouble going to the cemetery to tell him that we're not able to see the children.
When Sigfredo Garcia and Katie Magbanua go to trial in June of 2019, Ruth and Phil will be in the courtroom. And they won't be the only ones watching closely.
Sadness at the murder of a friend and a great, great lawyer, law professor person. And also anger that here we are more than 4 years later and... the people who are really, really behind the murder, whoever they might be, have not been brought to justice.
Time cures everything, so I'm less anguished than I was before, but I never forget him. He's always been in my heart, and I think of him quite often.
We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have our 3 children. We wouldn't have anything if it weren't for Dan. I mean, really, he gave us that. He gave us each other. And we often talk about, and we talk to friends about, how this could possibly have happened.
We will have come a long way when the people who organized this murder and the people who committed this murder are finally held to their proper account for what they've done. But there's not going to ever be true justice in this case because he's gone.
Zach and Abigail Schreier, Fernando Tesson, David Latt, Ruth and Phil Markell, Rob and Haritha Adelson, all of these people are waiting for justice.
But, you know, like Justice Holmes once said, you know, witnesses may dissemble, memories may fade, but circumstances never lie.
Former prosecutor Jeremy Mutz.
And, you know, one thing that stands out very strongly to me, and prosecutors love evidence of consciousness of guilt, where basically somebody, by their behavior, they show they're guilty. As you'll recall, the family members were caught on video at a cafe talking about whacking a undercover officer. Of course, they didn't know he was undercover. They thought he's trying to blackmail them, but you know, innocent people don't have to whack somebody for blackmail and you go to the police.
Like the Markells, Eric and I will be at the trial when it begins in June. If it begins, I guess. Because, well, if Katie and Sigfredo actually do know something about a larger conspiracy, they may still make a deal.
I want whoever is ultimately behind this to be brought to justice not to have a dramatic trial that they walk away from. So that means taking the time to make a really good case, and probably that means they need testimony from the people who are currently under indictment.
Usually when someone is arrested and accused of a serious crime and other people were involved, they will often immediately start identifying those other people in the hope of getting some leniency from the prosecution.
Not long ago, I asked David Latt, Dan's old Harvard buddy, if he could concoct a plausible explanation for why Rivera and Garcia would have killed Dan Markell if they hadn't been told to do so by one of the Adelsons. Latt thought about it for a while.
I think perhaps one possibility might be that somebody wanted to curry favor with the Adelsons and thought that they would want this outcome, but didn't tell the Adelsons that this was going to be done. Maybe that's one theory.
Maybe. I do know one thing for certain. Dan Markell, the legal scholar, would have had a lot to say about how justice is played out in the case of his own murder. In 2009, Dan co-wrote a book called Privilege or Punish: Criminal Justice and the Challenge of Family Ties. Like a lot of his legal writing, it's too dense for me to quote here. Well, pretty much all of it is, except for the 8 words he put on the book's dedication page. For Wendy, my everything, my world without end.
Baby, I'm guilty. I've got his blood on my hand.
Baby, you're crazy. I never touched that man.
Oh, why did you share those sheets? Oh, I found out where enemies sleep.
From Wondery, this is the final episode of the first season of Over My Dead Body, a story about love, justice, and money.
Well, let me ask you, if you found out that this was someone that you personally know, would that change your mind about what should happen to that person?
About what should happen to that person?
For prosecution purposes.
No.
Is there any way that you would think
somebody tried to kill my ex-husband? They should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
Regardless of who it is.
I mean, it would be different if I thought it were my brother, but I don't think it was my family. Anyone outside my immediate family, that's a tough one. Okay. But I don't think my immediate family did this. So okay. If it's anybody else, yeah.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Over My Dead Body ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Over My Dead Body was written and reported by me, Matthew Scher, and Eric Benson. Additional reporting by Sam Turkin. Fact-checking by Alex Karp. Sound design by Jeff Schmidt. We recorded our episodes at Arcade 160 Studios, where our engineer was Jimmy Guthrie. Associate producer is Chris Siegel. Executive produced by George Lavender, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.